Good morning, Oregon, and thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John with another episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which, under ordinary circumstances, every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Just a quick reminder that throughout the month of February, there will just be one podcast per week, rather than once every day. Daily service will resume on March 1st. Full details of the Offbeat Oregon History column and podcast can be found at offbeatoregon.com. Do check it out when you get a chance, but first, sit back and relax, and let me tell you the story of the Crook County Vigilantes. In the Prineville area, the early 1880s were like something out of a Louis L'Amour novel. Or maybe Zane Grey would be better. Masked riders galloping around by night, dispensing what they saw as justice. Other people saw it as something else. And it all started with the lynching of an innocent man following the murder of two other innocent men on the Ides of March, 1882. This is part one of a two-parter on the vigilantes in the Prineville area. The second half of it will be posting 1 week from today, next Friday. This story was first published on November 25th, 2012. It's brand new on the website and on the feeds. It's just out from under the embargo. And I'm going to read it to you now. Here we go. It was the Ides of March, March 15th, 1882. A.H. Crooks and Stephen Jory were blazing the boundaries of some land, cutting big marks in trees to mark what they claimed was the property line. This was near the ranch of a man named Lucius Langdon, near Prineville. The two of them broke for lunch. When they returned, Langdon was waiting for them with a shotgun. A few noisy, smoky seconds later, Crooks and Jory were dead, and their killing marked the start of a 2-year period of rule by masked gunmen and lynch mobs in the Prineville area that sounds today like the plot of a Louis L'Amour novel, or maybe Zane Grey, the story of the Crook County Vigilantes. Quote, "When a band of men went outside the law to revenge the killings, they also hanged an innocent man and started a rule by gun and rope that is one of the blackest chapters in Oregon's history," local rancher and future Sheriff James Blakely told a Morning Oregonian reporter many years later. Blakely himself was no unbiased observer of the vigilante phenomenon. He would, 2 years later, be the leader of the community group formed to oppose them. Blakely's anti-vigilante group called itself the Moonshiners. Actually, I guess you could call it an anti-vigilante group. They called themselves the Moonshiners because they kept watch when the moon was out, looking for masked riders. Remember, this was decades before Prohibition, when the name Moonshiner would come to mean something entirely different. Blakely's chief opponent was a frontier character named Colonel William Bud Thompson, a hard-fisted rancher, gunfighter, and sometime newspaper man. Although Colonel Thompson denied involvement with the vigilantes, he wrote an eloquent defense of their methods along with a noticeably vigilante-friendly version of the whole story in his book 30 years later. It's also worth noting that when he left the area, he went to Alturas, California, and there was more vigilante activity there, which he also denied involvement with. In any case, it is chiefly from the reminiscences of these two men, Mr. Blakely and Colonel Thompson, that we have the story of the vigilante era, and their stories diverge wildly in places. According to Blakely's account, he, Blakely, was in town with Langdon's hired hand, W.H. Harrison, when he heard the news that Langdon, Harrison's boss, had gunned down Crooks and Jory, that situation over the property line dispute that started this whole thing off. Both Blakely and Harrison hurried to join a posse that was coming together to go to Langdon's ranch and bring him in. Another posse went to Langdon's brother's place just in case he'd gone over there, but the killer was found at his own ranch and arrested. Well, Colonel Thompson's account is a bit different. In it, he says Harrison, the hired hand, was not with Blakely and did not ride with the posse. Instead, he was hiding out with Langdon at the brother's place. Thompson also claims that they found 10 men who were completely unknown to them in Langdon's brother's house. It's this story that most convinces me that Thompson's is an unreliable account, for in it, these 10 armed men are not arrested, and nothing is ever heard from them again, as if they were minor characters in a Western pulp magazine story. It's almost certain that he made them up in order to claim the Langdons were the leaders of a gang of outlaws, a gang that conveniently made up entirely of strangers from out of town, and to justify what was about to happen to Harrison, the hired hand. More on that in a minute. In any case, the posse brought Langdon home under arrest, with Harrison riding with them as a posse member. Langdon was entrusted to Deputy Sheriff John Lucky, and everyone went to bed. Very early the next morning, as Deputy Lucky was sitting by the stove, the vigilantes made their first move. Quote,
"The door was suddenly opened, and I was caught and thrown backward on the floor and firmly held, while my eyes were blinded, and immediately a pistol was fired rapidly 5 or 6 times. I heard someone groan about the time the firing ceased,"
Deputy Lucky wrote in a subsequent report to his boss, who was the sheriff up in the Dalles.
"I went to Langdon and found him dead. I looked around and a masked man stood at each door, warning by ominous signs for no one to undertake to leave the room."
The vigilantes then grabbed Harrison. It's not clear whether he was in the room with Langdon when the masked riders burst in, or whether he came later attracted by the activity. Ignoring his panic-stricken pleas, the masked men put a rope around his neck and used a horse to drag him through the streets of Prineville to the bridge, where they strung his by-now lifeless body from a banister. It was the beginning of the vigilantes' reign of their own special kind of law and order in Prineville Country, enforced by masked riders with drawn guns and ready ropes. Quote,
"The vigilantes who banded together that night to shoot Langdon and lynch the innocent Harrison stuck together for 2 years, getting bolder and bolder," Blakely told the Oregonian.
The group took to sending death threats with skull and crossbone emblems to various people around town, some of whom certainly were rustlers and criminals, but others of whom were simply fellow ranchers opposed to their methods. Colonel Thompson claims the escalation in vigilante activity was in response to a bold increase in crime, apparently by the unknown gang of 10 outlaws that was first encountered at Langdon's brother's house. Public opinion seems to have been on the vigilante side at first, which gives some credence to Colonel Thompson's claim that the group formed out of frustration with ineffective local law enforcement. But it didn't stay on their side for long. In fact, it seems to have turned on them later that year, in December, when the vigilantes lynched a horse jockey named Charles Luster. The vigilantes claimed Luster had been about to steal some horses, but most folks in town just happened to know that Luster had just refused to throw a horse race at the behest of some prominent vigilantes who'd bet against him. The sudden declaration that Luster was a horse thief seemed disturbingly convenient. Moreover, in the process of getting even with Luster, the vigilantes also killed another young man, a friend of Luster's who was with him that night. The two of them ended up hanging from a juniper tree together with the rancher who they'd been having dinner with. And the rancher they'd been working for, that's a fourth rancher, or rather a second rancher, had been shot through the window at the Prineville Saloon that same night. Colonel Thompson later tried to claim that the four of them had been part of a gang that had ridden through Prineville earlier in the day, shooting into the air and threatening to burn the town down, but his is the only account that even mentions anything of this kind. Again, it seems likely that he was just making up a story to justify the vigilantes. After this incident, the residents of Prineville definitively turned against the vigilantes. But law enforcement was still extraordinarily light and ineffective throughout the Prineville area. Sure, the vigilantes were throwing their weight around, but could anything be done about them? And would a crook county without the vigilantes be even worse? More innocent people were going to have to die before the town would commit to doing something about it. We'll talk about how that played out in next week's column. Look for that on Friday of next week. That's it for today, and that's it for the week. And if you're listening for the first time and want some more information about Offbeat Oregon history, you can get everything at our central website at offbeatoregon.com. Complete catalog of about 210 columns going back to 2008, plus links out to audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and also out to the Facebook page and Twitter feed in case you'd like to join the conversation. The website's also where you'll find full citations to sources for this story, which include works by Herbert Lundy, William Thompson, and Phil Brogan. Our theme music is a track by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and it was written by Carmen Ficarra. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Come into Corvallis, drop me a line, let's grab a cup of coffee and talk about history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Well, coming up next week, 1 week from today, we'll have part 2 and the final installment of the story of the Crook County Vigilantes. was a pretty terrible time to be living through, I'm sure. But look for that story after about 6 a.m. on Friday morning. And in the meantime, go fill up the rest of the week with good stuff. Bye now.